We're holding on Huff Tess Ahmed Bey is the last line. We talked about the case where a husband appoints a shliach to deliver the get to his wife, and the dinim of when that shliach can appoint another shliach, and so on and so forth. So now another point in that regard. Omar Rava, how vade come by along? Now, the following question we certainly do need to ask. In other words, we said before that there are certain things in this regard that are more obvious. The fact, for example, that we said yesterday that even when the person is not yet a shliach legerushin, that sometimes we can say that, for example, where the gerushin is supposed to take effect in 30 days was the last example, where nevertheless we can still consider as though he's a shliach legerushin and be able to delegate the shlichus to somebody else. So Rava says, okay, but we still do have to ask the following question. Ki mishavu based in shliach. Now, we talked about an on Mishnah where the last case we had involving the 30 days, we said was that Beis Din should appoint the shliach. The case was the person had sent the get with the shliach. He said it's only going to take effect. He should only give it to her 30 days from now. During the 30 days is an onus. He's not going to be able to complete the shlichus. So Rava said that what you should do is tell over in front of Beis Din what your shlichus was, and we Beis Din will appoint another shliach for it. So now, when that happens, Rava asked, Kima Shavu Beis Din shliach, Bafonav or Shalei Bafonav? Does it have to be in the presence of the original shliach, or can it be even not in his presence? In this case, the guy is onus. He's not going to. Rashi explains the onus was that he can't wait on you. In other words, when we talked about yesterday, the scenario was the husband had told him, give her the get only 30 days from now. Originally, the guy figured he's going to be able to, but then there was some kind of onus that prevented him from, he's not going to be able to stick around for 30 days. So now, Rava had said that Beis Din will appoint a new shliach on his behalf, but do they have to do it in his presence or not? Hoder Poshta, then after asking the question, Rava then answered it. It will work whether it's in his presence or not in his presence. Doesn't matter whether the guy is present. Once he's told over his shlichus to the Beis Din, then they can go and appoint another shliach on the basis of what he said. And in fact, Shochel Mutam, they sent from Eretz Yisrael a message. Yes, Bein Befonav, Bein Shalei Befonav, whether it's in his presence or not, the original shliach is not required to be there in order for Beis Din to appoint a new shliach. Okay. Since we talked about an example of, we talked about examples of oynes, and in particular, in the last piece, we mentioned the example where a person says this get should take effect if I don't come within 12 months. So he said he wants the get to take effect retroactively of now, me'achshav, if I don't come back within 12 months. So we said that if he dies during that 12 months, then it is a valid get. So now the Gemara is going to talk about a similar case, also involving an onus, involving a tnai with a get. Mainly this kind of thing, as far as tnoyim with getin, where the validity of the get is postponed to later on. Mainly we're going to be talking about that later in the Masechta, but here the Gemara brings one case of it over here. Hahud Omar, there was a man who said to the shluchim or the edim of the get, if I don't come back within the 30 days, then this should be a valid get. Also, now, before the 30 days were up, he came back, opaske mabra, but he was held up by the ferry. There was no ferry available. He was across the river. He was stranded across the river. He couldn't find, the ferry wasn't available, so he wasn't able to cross. So he says to people, and he calls out to people on the other side of the river, Chazuda Asoi, look, I've come back, look, I've come back. In other words, the get should be, the get should not be Chal. Omar Shmuel, Loi Shmei Masya, so Shmuel says that's not considered coming, because the fact is he didn't get to hear, there was an onus. Nonetheless, we say in this connection, Ein Onus Begitin. So, We actually learned at the beginning of Ksubas, so a while back, that there were, we had two different Lashonis in the Gemara over there, whether Yesh Onus Begitin or Ein Onus Begitin. The Gemara had discussed over there that when it comes to marriage, it can happen that a couple is in Kiddushin and they're ready to go to Nisuin and something happens, some kind of onus happens to the Chosin or to the Kala that prevents the wedding from actually taking place yet. And we said that has certain implications in Halacha as far as her receiving the Zonus, as far as her being able to eat Truma, etc. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to Gittin, then the Gemara brought two different Lashonis over there, whether Yesh Onus Begittin or Ein Onus Begittin. So here, Rashi says there's two possibilities. Either Shmuel holds Ein Onus Begittin, so it doesn't matter, in other words, whether there was an Onus or not. The fact is he wasn't there, and therefore the get is Chal. Or the other possibility, it could be that we would say Yesh Onus Begittin, but that Gemara in Ksuba says that since this is a very common, very expectable kind of onus, then he should have included that in his tenai. So in other words, according to that second way of looking at it, if it had been an onus that's really completely out of left field, then yes, maybe we would say yesh onus begitin, and we would say that the get is not chal, but here, the fact that he can't catch the ferry is a very expectable thing, and he should have included that in his tenai. So it comes out therefore that the get is chal. In the next paragraph, actually, the Gemara asks the question, why do we need that anyway? The fact is the husband has the ability to be mevatel the get. So why didn't you just say that he's mevatel? So in fact, the Gemara says, you're right. If he were to say, I'm mevatel, then yeah, that would work. But here he's just trying to say that it's based on, the onus, and that doesn't work because ain't onus begins. Another case, Hahuda Amalahu, there was a man who said when he gave the get to the shliach or to the edim or whatever, the Amalahu, he says to them, if I'm not Matthias her, if I don't appease her to make up with me and stay married within the next 30 days, then let it be a valid get. Ozel Paisa, so he went to attempt to do that. Rashi explains he went to talk to her and bring friends to try and appease her and whatever, and she wasn't willing. Veloi Faisa, she wasn't willing to make up with him. So the question is it a valid get? Omer Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef says, of course it's a valid get. Mi Yohiva Tauka of the Dinuri Veloi Faisa, did he offer her a Tauka of gold dinarim and she wasn't appeased? In other words, he didn't go to the ultimate extreme in trying to be Matthias, or he could have done that. He could have offered her an enormous amount. Tauka is three kavim, so it's an enormous amount of money. Gemara, for example, elsewhere uses that expression that it says that Yoshua, we learned in Yevamos, Yoshua ben Gamla's wife, Mauta bas Baisus, gave that amount as a bribe to Yanei HaMelech to appoint her husband as Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara sometimes uses it as an expression meaning an enormous amount of money. You know, nowadays you would say like a suitcase full of unmarked bills or whatever. So Rabbi Yosef is saying he didn't do that. So therefore, you can't say that he made every possible attempt. So we're not going to say that it was an onus. It wasn't an onus because he could have gone the extra miles to that. He could have gone the extra mile for that. Now Tosfos points out if we say ein onus begitin, it wouldn't matter anyway. Even if he did do that and it didn't work, it still wouldn't work. The vort is you could have understood like payisna law to mean if I don't make the effort. So if he makes the effort, then he did try, so he was Makayimus tonight, but the fact is Rabbi Yosef is saying even within that, he didn't even make the ultimate possible effort. So Rabbi Yosef is arguing that it would be a get, that the get would be chal. The tnai has been fulfilled. He doesn't have that tack of the dinri. Nevertheless, that doesn't matter. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion rose, that Amr of Yosef, midi taukav adini boil mesav. Well, according to the second version, of Yosef says, what, are you expecting to give her a taukav of gold coins? Ha-paisav lo-yifaisav. After all, he tried to be mephiaser, and it wasn't, and it didn't work. She wasn't receptive to it. So, what's the underlying idea? What's the underlying difference between the two lashonis? Ha, Commander Omar, yesh onis v'gitin. The second version follows the opinion that again you have that in that sugya at the beginning of Ksubas that says yesh onis v'gitin. That when we say that a get is to take effect based on a certain tnai, if there was an onus, then we say the tnai indeed was not fulfilled. So even though the thing did not actually happen, but because it was an onus, we would say yesh onus begitin, and therefore that's a valid claim, and therefore the get is not chal. Ha, Commander Omar, ein onus begitin, and the first version is according to the opinion that ein onus begitin, and therefore it doesn't matter what the reason was. That the thing didn't happen. The fact is it didn't happen, and we would say ein onus begitin. That's in fact the halacha, and therefore the halacha would be that even if, in the case of the guy with the ferry, we're saying there it doesn't really matter. Even if we say yesh onus begitin, he should have thought of that. But even in this case, even in the second case of the where we're trying to appease her and talk about the dinery, we say that there could have been more that he tried to do. And the fact that he didn't do everything possible means we're going to say ein onus begitin, and therefore the get is chal. Here Rashi uses the expression that he said that he said the get should take effect me'achshav. In the previous case, he didn't mention that point that he wants the get to take effect retroactively. So the Maharam Shift mentions that, and he asks why didn't Rashi explain the same in both places. And then the answer is it has to do with this that it talks about in the next perek, that he could be mevatalet. That in the first case, the Gemara argues in the next parak, why isn't he just mevatel it? But he can't catch the ferry. And the answer is sure he could, but the case is that he's trying to not be mevatel it, but rather just say it shouldn't take effect because I'm here. Whereas in the second case, why won't Basin just tell him, look, you don't want to divorce her, then just go be mevatel the get? So Rashi has to explain that we're talking about that the get was given in a way that's me'achshav, but to take effect as of now, and therefore it's too late to be mevatel it. Okay. From here till the end of the parak, till the top of Lamed Beis and Aleph, the Mishnah and the Gemara are going to digress to a topic outside of the halachas of Gittin. We learned a couple of Mishnahs ago, we learned on Daf Chafes, that you can have a case where a get is being brought from a husband who's old or sick, and we said he has a cheskas chayim, there's a chazaka that he's still alive, and therefore the get can be delivered. So now, in a similar vein, we're going to have something in our Mishnah also where you're able to assume that something is still the case as it was. So the Mishnah says, Hamal v'mos sakoyin v'salehu v'sa'oni. So this and the next Mishnah are going to deal with a matter involving the halachas of Truma and Maisa. So Hamal v'mos sakoyin v'salehu v'sa'oni. If a person lends money to a Kohen or a Levi or poor person, Lias Mafresh Alein Mechalkan, where the deal is that he's going to be paid back by separating out Truma and Meiser from their portion. In other words, what he's going to do is this Malva, the next time that he has to separate out his Truma, so he'll, instead of like this, usually he would give the Truma for free to a Kohen, instead like this, in order to pay off the debt, he's going to keep the Truma and he's going to keep it. Now he can't eat it, he not being a Kohen, but he will keep it and sell it to a Kohen. And the same thing with the other things, the same way with the Meiser and the Meiser Rishon and the Meiser Oni. He'll keep it and use it to sell off to pay off the debt. So he's able to do that. He can continue to do that. So in the case of Meiser Rishon, Rashi points out, he's going to have to, of course, separate Trumas Meiser and give it to the Kohen, because that's also to Azur, but the rest of it he'll be able to eat. The rest of it is Cholin. The point is, Rashi explains, it's not considered that he's stealing the Matnas Kahuna from the Kohenim or Leviim or the Maaser Oni from the Aniim, because the fact is he already lent out the money and now he's just using this to collect it. The Gemara still is going to point out, still can't other Kohenim or Leviim or Aniim say that it's more our business, it's equally well our business, why should it be because you lent money to Pliny the Kohen that we should lose out? So we'll see about that in the Gemara. Anyway, so Mafreshalen b'cheska shein kayomin, he can continue to separate on that arrangement on the assumption that they're alive. So he lent money to this guy. Every year after that, when he's taking off his Trumas and Maestris, he keeps it, and then later on, in the case of the Trumas, sells it to other Kohenim, he can continue to do that without checking every year to make sure that the guy is alive. He doesn't have to worry about that. What if the Kohen or the Levi died, or what if the poor person became rich, where then the deal wouldn't be in effect anymore, but nevertheless, we have Cheskas Chaim. Again, we have Chazaka that he's alive. In fact, the Ritva adds, not only that, we don't have to be concerned that maybe the Loiva changed his mind and doesn't want to keep this deal anymore and he's just going to pay it off, until we find out he's going to do that. He has the right to assume the Chazaka that the guy still wants this arrangement to be kept. Now, Mesu, what happens if he does find out that they died? So if he wants to continue this with their children, Sorech Little, the Shusna Yoshin, then he needs to get permission from the Yoshin. Because after all, they're not actually technically required, Api Alocha, to pay off this loan. There is, mitzvah, like you said, before Chayvavim, but not to the extent that, it's such an obligation on them. So if they want to continue with this deal, then they need that he's going to keep the Truma and Meister and eventually pay off the debt that way. He needs to check with them. Im Hilvan, Bifnei Beistin, on the other hand, if he lent them to begin with in front of Beistin, Einet Sarach Little Rishus, Mina Yoshin, then he does not need to get permission from the Yoshim, because, Rashi explains, because Beistin has the power to impose this whole deal on all the Kohenim or Leviim, or on all the poor people. And the reason for that is because it benefits them that way. People will be more willing to lend them money, knowing that there's a guaranteed income stream over here, that there's a guaranteed thing where Truma and Maaser will be given to them, and therefore that a loan can be paid off that way, people will be more willing to lend them money. So if it was done privately, then not. But if it was done in front of Beistin, then Beistin will have the rights to impose it on the next one. And the Ritva actually brings from the Yerushalmi that only by a Kohen or a Levi would it even work to get permission from the Yoshim anyway, because after all, they get it by virtue of the fact that their father was a Kohen or a Levi. So therefore it can be considered like a Yerusha, but he argues that not with a poor person. He doesn't get it from the Koyach of his father just because he himself is poor. So therefore that way it can't really be considered a Yerusha. Okay. So the Gemara asks, now, how could you say that you collect your debt using Truma and Maaser? It hasn't yet reached the hands of the Kohen or the Levi. So how can he have been Zoiche in it? How can the Kohen, let's say the Kohen we're talking about, how can he have been Zoiche in this Truma such that we could say, well, now let's take this Truma and the landowner will keep it and sell it to some other Kohen later on? What makes it, what kinyan was done to make it actually belong to that first Kohen in the first place? In particular, Rashi says, how is he yotze the mitzvah of nesina? There's a mitzvah to give truma and maaser to the Kohenim, to give truma to the Kohenim and maaser to the Levim and so forth. And how exactly is he accomplishing that mitzvah of nesina? So Omar Rav Makore Kohuna. So Rav says we're talking about where he's a friend of the Kohen. So in other words, this regularly every year, this landowner, when he's been giving truma, he's always been giving it to this one Kohen. And the same thing with the other maestros. So therefore, like the other So therefore, the other Kohanim have been Masiach Das. They think to themselves, why should we bother? Realistically, we know that the Truma from this guy is going to be going to this Kohen anyway. So therefore, the other Aniyim all have Yush, all the other Kohanim, etc., all have Yush from it, and therefore it can be considered as though it already belonged to him. Shmuel says a different answer. We're talking about he was mezakeh to them through somebody else. When he takes off his meiser or his truma or whatever, he gives it to a friend of his and he says, you be zeuche in this meiser on behalf of Pliny the Levi. The same kind of thing as we do like with Erev Chatzeres and Erev Tavshilin or whatever, where you give the food to somebody else and he lifts it up. And he's zeuche in it on behalf of everybody else. So here you do the same kind of thing. So therefore there was an actual kinyan done. Ula Omer, and Ula says a third answer. Homani Rabbi Yosi, he damo osu as she'ina zeuche ke zeuche. Ula says our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Yosi. He says there are various examples where even though somebody was not yet zeuche in something, we treat him as though he was. Because for various reasons, the Chachamim found it necessary to make that for a takana. Rashi gives a couple of examples. One of them is later in Ar Masechta, where a poor person is collecting olives from the top of a tree and then throwing them down onto the ground. So even though he hasn't technically done a kinyan with them yet, because all he's doing is knocking them off with a stick, he hasn't actually picked them up yet. Nevertheless, mitnei darkei shalom. The Chachamim said other people shouldn't take them. You have a few other examples of that throughout Shas. So you have this kind of thing. Rashi says, "Mipnei takana," in order to promote peace between people and make things and make business deals and whatever work out better. Then Rabbi Yossi says there are those kinds of cases where even though he wasn't zoche in something, we consider it as though he was koinet and as though he was zoche in it. So therefore, the same thing over here. Even though no actual kinyan has been done on this truma meiser, nevertheless, it'll still work. So the Gemara points out, why do we need three different answers? Kulu k'rav le'amri. None of the other chachamim, Shmuel and Ula, do not want to learn like Rav because b'makore like Hatani. The fact is, the Mishnah never says anything about this applying only to makore kohuna. So you're telling me, Rav, that it only applies when you have a Kohen that you've been close with all these years and giving him your Truma, and the same thing with the others, and therefore you're going to say that the case of our Mishnah refers only to that, but the Mishnah doesn't give any hint of that. It's one thing, Tosfos says, it's one thing to say that it's referring to Mezakeh, at least then that does, it's true, it doesn't say Mezakeh in the Mishnah either, but at least that has the benefit of applying to all the Kohen. So Shmuel and Ula do not like Rav's reason. Because Shmuel like Amri, they don't want to say like Shmuel, that we're talking about that he's mezakeh to them by others. Because again, the mezakeh like Katoni, the Mishnah never said anything about being mezakeh, so therefore we shouldn't assume that was the case unless the Mishnah spells it out. In other words, Tosca says, the fact that it says that the Lias Mafushalin, Bechaska Shem Kayamin, and it didn't, so we have to assume that it means that he can be Mafush and do nothing else. No Zikui is necessary, so therefore Rav and Ula don't like the answer to say that you have to be Mezakeh, because then the Mishnah should have mentioned that point. It's one thing to say Makore, fine, you could say the fact is, the Mishnah is saying, when you have such an arrangement, nothing further is needed, no further action is needed, no kinyan or anything. And Ka'ula Nami La'amri, and none of them want to say, like the Rav and Shmuel don't want to say like Ula, Ki Chidol La'imukminon, we would prefer not to have to say the Mishnah is according to a Das Yochid, we would prefer not to say it's only according to Rabbi Yossi. In general, we would prefer to say that a Stam Mishnah is according to everybody. So the Gemara continues. Let's talk about more about this detail, about the details of what happens over here when you make such a deal with the Kohen or the Levi or the Oni. So Tana Rabbanan, Hamalva Mois, the Kohen Vesa Levi, person lends money to the Kohen or to the Levi Vesa Oni, or to the poor person, Lias Mafra Shalem Mechelkan, where then he's going to separate out Truma or Maiso that would have been their portion, and he's going to sell it. So we said in the Mishnah, Mafresh Alein Bechazka Shein Hayamin. So he's able to separate it, to continue separating it on the assumption that the Kohen or the Levi or the Oni is still alive. But now the Braisa is going to add more details, more halachas that are relevant to this case. Number one, he's allowed to agree with them on the cheap price, on the cheaper price, the Ein Shum Ribis, and there's no Ribis involved. Meaning, in Bav Metzia, you have a parak, you have parak Ezo Neshach, the fifth parak over there that talks about in detail the dinim of Ribis. Now, ordinarily, you have when you might make a deal with somebody that you might make a deal with somebody that he's going to prepay you for some grain or whatever, and you'll give it to him when the time comes. Now, the price may be lower than it is now, so that would in effect mean that you, so what would that mean if let's say the price now is $10 a bushel, and he's given you, let's say now, $100, which right now would get him 10 bushels. But if later on the prices go down, let's say to $8, then it means you're going to be giving him 12 and a half bushels for the same amount of money. And that potentially could be a problem of ribis, because in effect you're giving him extra because he prepaid you. So the Gemara discusses over there that there are two scenarios where you're allowed to do that. So, for our purposes, what's important is that you have something called Yotza Hashar. If you have at the time when they made this deal, there's a known fixed price for it. So then we don't care about the fact that later on the prices are going to go down. Because what happens is that, therefore, we would say, in effect, when you think about it, right now, you're giving me $100, I could have gone right now and gone and bought 10 bushels of wheat for you at the current price, and therefore, if we choose not to, and instead we're going to wait until later on in the season, and prices may go down, then that's not a problem, it's not an issue of ribis. Since that whole situation is only also derabanan anyway, then the chachamim can be makel where yotza hashar, where there's a known prevailing price. Where there's not, then the Gemara says, there's another possibility called Yesh Loi that would work, but whatever. We're not going to get into that over here because we're not talking about Balachas of Ribis. The point is it's not considered Ribis to make up that he's going to give him a quarter, that if the price of wheat goes down when he actually takes off the Truma Meiser, then he says I'm willing to accept it. According to the price that it was, according to that price then, meaning that I'm going to be taking more truma and meiser and using it to pay off more of your loan. There's no problem of ribis in that. Because usually you need, again, yotza ashar, you need there to be a prevailing price. Here it doesn't matter whether yotza ashar or not, it'll still work. So that's number one. The Ein Shvius Meshamatzoi. Another din is that Shvius will not Shmita will not cancel such a debt, even if a prusbul has not been made. The Imbal Lachzer Ein Echozer. If he wants to change his mind, if he wants to renege from the deal, he can't do that. Which we'll see in the Gemara soon what that refers to. So Tosfos, by the way, says, as far as the Shar Azul business, it means, the Gemara is going to go on to explain, it means that even though they didn't actually make up a fixed price, nevertheless, whatever the price is at the time when he separates the Truma and Meiser, then we're going to follow that amount. So Shvius is not Meshamet. Vim Bolachzer and Echozer, if he wants to renege on the deal, he can't. We'll see soon in the Gemara who is it that wants to back out of the deal. Another din is Yashua Bailim. Another din, though, if the owner, if the Malva has given up of being able to collect from Meiser, for example, his fields were damaged by wind or something, and therefore, so he says, Yush, as usual, is Vaila Chisorin Kis. He says, woe about this loss of money. I give up, in other words. So even though things improve after that, Ein Mafish Aleim, now he can't be Mafish Truma and Meiser in the future and use it to collect the debt. Lepisha Ein Mafish and Allah Ovud, because you can't collect where he already gave up hope of getting back the loan. So in other words, like this, the deal was, he said, I previously lent you $100 and it's going to be paid off gradually with Truma and Meiser. But now he says, my crops have been damaged. So forget about it. I can see I'm never going to have a way of collecting this debt because the deal to begin with was that instead of me going and demanding it from you, I'm going to be paid over the years with Truma and Meiser. And now I can't because now there's not going to be any more Truma and Meiser in the future. So even if in the future there is, then he can't continue with doing this because at this point, he already had yish, and therefore he already gave up hope of recovering that debt, and therefore the debt in effect has been nimchal. Okay, so those are all various dinim that the Braisa says about this scenario, about this deal. So now the Gemara is going to analyze it. We said they can make the deal that it's going to be according to the cheaper price. So what asks Pshita? Isn't that obvious? Even without making such a deal, isn't it obvious that isn't it obvious that you can go according to the cheaper price? In general, you're allowed to do that even without it tonight. So the Gemara says you're right. What it means is even though they didn't actually explicitly make that deal, it's considered as though he did. If the price goes down, then he's going to be able to say that I'm going to get a larger amount of produce, which is going to be used to pay off the debt, and I'm going to keep it and sell it for in order to pay off the debt. So it means, in other words, when he makes a deal that I'm going to collect Meiser, so it'll automatically be according to the cheaper price that's going to be later in the season or later in later years when the Truma and Meiser is actually taken on. And the Braisa said, the Ein Brei Mishum Ribis, there's no issue of Ribis in that. So the Gemara says, my time, so why indeed? Is there no Ribis, even if you don't have Yotza Ashar or anything like that? The reason is, Kivin Deki Les Leila Yohivlei, because if the Malva does not have payrus available, for example, again, if there was a nishtadfu sadoisev, if his crops were damaged by an east wind or whatever, then the loiva wouldn't be obligated to pay off the debt, because after all, we just said the deal was that the debt's going to be paid off with using Truma and Meiser. So therefore, ki isle nami, ein b'mishum ribis, therefore, even when the farmer does have produce available to be paid back with, then it's not considered. It's not considered a real loan, so to speak. And therefore, the whole concept of ribis doesn't happen there. Doesn't apply to it. The concept of ribis would be where you have a loan that's basically guaranteed to be paid off, and here you don't really have that because here it's contingent on whether the field continues to produce crops in later years. Okay, we said. The ain't shvius meshamat. So we said shvius does not cancel this debt. Because when does the concept of shmita apply to cancel a debt? When it's a debt that you could have demanded, and the Torah is telling you don't demand it and cancel it when shmita comes. Here he can't demand it because to begin with the deal was that he's not going to be paid back in the normal way. He's going to be paid back using this Truma and Meiser method. And therefore, to begin with, if he were to go to the loiva and say, pay up the debt, the loiva would be able to say, no, I don't need to. You collect it the way that we agreed to begin with. So therefore, the shmita doesn't apply to that kind of debt. We said, if he wants to renege on the deal, if he wants to back out of the deal, then he can't do that. So I'm going to pop the shanu elabala bias. When we say that he can't change his mind, means lo shanu elabala bias b'koyin. Means the Balabayas can't change his mind and say to the Kohen that I don't want to do that, and that I want to turn this into a regular loan. You're going to pay me back in the regular way because at this point the money is already in the Kohen's hands. The Malva hasn't yet received anything from the Kohen such that we should say that there's something to be able to to go back on. So once he gave the money to the Kohen, in other words, he shouldn't have, uh, uh, he, he should have said, uh, um, So you can't say, in other words, that, well, if I don't find, so like this, if there had been, Rashi explains, if there was something that he was going to receive from the Kohen, then he could say, look, I didn't receive whatever it was I was supposed to from you, therefore the Kenyan hasn't taken place. But like this, where there's nothing for him to be Moshech, to be Kohen from the Kohen, then there's nothing for him to, there's nothing for him to say that there's lacking in this deal, and therefore that I should be able to rename. Aval Kohen, the Balabayas, but Rapapa says the Kohen can change his mind and say to the Balabayas, I don't want to continue this deal. In Bolach Sechoser, if he wants to change his mind, he could. So Jitnan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia, Nosam Le Mois for Le Moshech Hemenu Peres, if one person gives to the other money to buy something, and he didn't yet do mashicha on the fruit, yochol lachzavoy, that he's able to change his mind. So the same way over here, he can. So the same way over here, since we said before that it's considered like he was zeicher, so he could say, look, no mashicha was done yet. So therefore, therefore, I can back out of the deal, and instead of you selling the truma and maisa in the future, instead I'll pay you back the way you would pay back a regular loan. We said in the Braisa, this Yashua Bailam, the fifth case in the Braisa was that if the owner gives up hope of ever recovering this debt, namely we said that his fields were damaged, and therefore he figures there's not going to be Trumas and Maisus in the future to be able to collect the debt from. So then we said, Ein Mafish Aleihem, that he can't continue afterwards when things improve. He can't continue to separate Meiser on behalf of this person and then pay back the debt. Lafish Ein Mafish and Allah Obud, because he can't, the Brais had said, because you don't collect, you can't separate and then make this deal for something that's already been lost. In other words, the debt's already been lost, that he gave up hope of getting back the debt. So then when asked, Shitta, well, isn't that obvious? Of course, if the deal was that he's only going to collect from Maisers, and there's no Maiser, so of course he's not going to be able to. And the answer is Loit Sricha de Akun. Yes, but the Chiddush of the Braisa is, even though there's the stalks of, even though the grain in the field has already been in, is already in stalks, so it already grew a significant amount. So now it dried up as a result of the shidufin. Maud tema akanta milsi. So you would think the fact that it already grew into stalks is already a big thing. It's already something. It's very far along in the growth process, and maybe it'll still recover, and maybe it'll still be usable. It's not usual, Rashi explains, that at that point it should be so completely destroyed that the whole crop is gone for the year. So it's Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us that no, we don't pay attention to that. The fact is, he said, Vile the Chisorin Kis. He said, woe to the fact I've lost this money. So even though it was already in stalks and there is a chance of it, there is a chance of being able to recover it, nevertheless, it's considered yish. The debt is considered that he was moichel the debt through this yish, and therefore later on, even if things do improve, then he can't go back to the Kohen or the Levi and say, I want to collect the debt. The Gemara goes on. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Hamal v'Mois Hakohen v'Salehu v'Beistin. So now we said in the Mishnah that if he lends them in Beistin, then in the future if they die, he doesn't need reshus from the Yoshim. So let's talk more about that. Hamal v'Mois Hakohen v'Salehu v'Beistin. If he does this arrangement in Beistin, Umesu, and then the Kohen or Levi dies, he can continue to separate out the Truma and Meiser on the Chazaka of that entire Shevet. So in the Mishnah we said that he doesn't need to ask permission from the Yoshim. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is explaining that he doesn't need to ask because in effect the Chachamim are imposing that debt on the rest of the Kohenim or the Levim. Because again, there's an advantage to them in that. In the future, people are more willing to lend them money, knowing that there's this guaranteed income stream of Truma and Meiser, and therefore, so since it was done in Beistin, then it can continue to collect on behalf of that Shevet. Vesa Oni, but Beistin Umes. There are Rishonim who learn actually, the Balamur learns that actually that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is actually arguing with the Mishnah and saying that the case was that it was in front of Beis Din. We said he doesn't need to ask the Yoshim for permission. But at least he needs to do with the Yoshim, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would be learning that we're talking about not even Yoshim, just other Kohenim and Levim who are not otherwise related to them, and say that it would still work with them as well. And then the Raivan and Mohammed over there argue on that and say that no, it means like Rashi had said, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agrees with the Mishnah. Anyway. Likewise, if he made this deal with an oni in front of Beis Din that he's going to collect from Maisa oni umes, and the oni dies before the loan has been paid off, then again he's able to collect on the basis of the fact that there are other aniyim over there. So now Rashi points out the Yoshim of this Oni are not necessarily themselves poor. So we can't necessarily say Bcheskas Yoshim, but we would say Bcheskas Aniya Yisrael on the basis of the fact that there are other poor Jews in the city. And again, the idea would be that the Chachamim impose the debt on all Jewish poor in the city, because again, there's an incentive for all of them. This way, people are more likely to lend them money. Rab Achi Yomah Becheskas Aniya Olam. Rab Achi says that actually it's not Becheskas Aniya Yisrael, but rather Becheskas Aniya Olam on behalf of the poor people in that town, even if they're not necessarily Jews. So the Gemara says, "My benayhu, what's the practical difference between them?" And the answer is, "Ikke benayhu aniye kusim." What if there are kusim in town who are poor? You know, many times in the Gemara, when we have the word kusim, it's actually the sense of change from the word goyim. Here it actually means kusim because you have the famous machlokas whether kusim are geire arayis or geire emes, are they considered legitimate geirim or not? Eventually it was decided, as we learned a few days ago, that they are considered goyim gmurim. But back before that, there was always the question about their status. So therefore, sort of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying the kusim are only geire arayis, and therefore they're not entitled to ma'isoni. Whereas according to Rabbi Achi, they are considered regular Jews because they're geire emes, and therefore you can separate ma'isoni on having them in mind as well. So Tosfos points out though that we're only talking about still all of this would only apply to the people of that city. So it's not really a matter, Tosfos says, of Ania of Geri Arias or Geri Emes. We're talking about more, does it apply only to the poor people in that city, or does it apply also can the Beis Din impose this debt on poor people in other places? Okay. Now the Braisa continues. Heshira oni. What happens if now the poor person becomes rich? So now he's not entitled to collect maisa oni anymore. Ein mafusholov. So now the balabos can't continue to separate out the maisa and collect his debt from that because now he has to give it to a different person. The zocha halava mashiyadoi. The one, the former oni who is now rich has been zocha what he has in his hand. In other words, given that to begin with the loan was taken out in a way where he's not required to pay back directly, then at this point it's considered as though the loan has been nimchal. Because since the only vehicle for paying back the loan, it was agreed that the only vehicle for it is going to be Maisa Oni, and now this guy is not entitled to Maisa Oni anymore, then the loan is lost. Okay. So the Gemara asks, V'rabbanan, we have to ask, how come when the guy dies and the Chachamim made a takana that he can still continue to give, having in mind that it would be from the other aniyim? And again, in effect, what we're saying is the Chachamim imposed the debt on all the rest of the aniyim in order that this way people will have an incentive to lend them money in the future. Why did the Chachamim not make a similar kind of takana in case the guy becomes rich, that we should say the same thing, that the debt should still exist and continue to be incumbent on the rest of the aniyim in town or in the world? The answer is, the Gemara says, Misa shticha ashirus lo shticha. That a person should die is common enough, so therefore the Chachamim needed to make a takana. You don't want to have that, you know, that we find all over in Shas. We're going to have examples of it later in our Masechta, that we want to promote the idea that one Jew should lend another money. We don't want shalatino delos b'fnei loivin. You don't want doors to be locked in front of people who would want to borrow money. So since it's a common enough thing that you're going to make a deal with this poor person to give him the maaser oni, and then he might die before the deal is completed, then therefore the Chachamim found it necessary to make a takana that even in that case the loan should still continue to exist, and just in effect it'll be paid off by the other aniyim in town by him continuing to take the maaser oni and sell it or keep it for himself. But that a poor person should become rich is not really that common. And of course, in general, the Chachamim don't make takanas on things that are uncommon. So if it should happen, it could happen, a fluke, that a poor person becomes rich. But it's not common enough that the Chachamim should make a takana for that. Amar Papa, so the Papa says, you see that? Hainu da'amu inchi, it's like a popular expression. People say, chavrach mis asher, if they tell you your friend has died, then you can believe it. Is Asher, loy to Asher, but if they tell you he became rich, then don't believe it because it's not very likely. So we see that popular expression bears out this point. It's not that common that a poor person who's in position to be collecting Maisa Oni should become rich to the extent that he can't, and therefore the Chachamim didn't find it necessary to make a takana for that. Okay. The Mishnah had continued, Meth Tzarech Lito Rashus Menei V'chola. We said that once the Kohen or the Levi or the poor person dies, then you have to get Rashus from the Yoshim to be able to continue collecting like this. And again, we said before, the Ritva says Davka by a Kohen or a Levi, because they're getting it by virtue of their father, not necessarily by an Oni. It wouldn't necessarily work anyway to get Rashus from the Yoshim. Anyway. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer Yoshin She Yoshu. What we mean is over here, when the heirs inherited from the loiva. So you want to ask, what do you mean? Umika Yoshin de lo Yarsi. So what do you mean? Well, by definition, doesn't Yoshin mean that they actually received something? So what do you mean? You're Yoshin that received something, as opposed to what? Ela Omer Rebbe Yechanan, so Rebbe Yechanan says, what Rebbe means is She Yoshu Karka Velo Yoshu Ksafin. Velo She Yoshu Ksafin. What we're saying is, when can the Malva get permission from the Yoshin to continue collecting from them is only if they inherited land from their father. So then they have more of a mitzvah to pay back their father's debt, because now there's a shibud on the land. The loich Yoshuk Safim, not when they only inherited money or other metalplin, where there they don't really have such a chiyuv to pay back the loan. So since Beis Din can't force them to pay back the loan, because the Tautlin of Yisraelim are not Meshubad to a Baal Choyv, so therefore in effect the loan is lost, and therefore he has no ability to collect it, even though there are other Kohenim or Levim in town. That's how Rashi learns. Again, there are Rishonim who learn that the statement in the Gemara over here is referring back to the Reisha of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah had said that he can continue to do it lias machos shalein mechelkan and sorech little reshus from the Yoshin. That would only apply when can he get reshus from the Yoshin and continue to collect the debt, only if they yarshin karka. Tosfa says it may be referring to the Sefer, that where the Sefer, the end of the Mishnah had said that if he lends them in front of Beis Din, he doesn't even need Rishus. But nevertheless, we're saying that would still only work, even to not read Rishus from Beis Din would only apply if the Yoshim actually inherited Karka. And that goes back with that point from the Baal Amor from before, that therefore he learns that in fact Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov at the bottom of the previous Amud is disagreeing with that, and disagreeing with the men, disagreeing with the Mishnah, and different other Rishonim say that no. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, now Rabbi Yochanan, Omer Rabbi Yonasan, so Rabbi Yonasan says further in this connection, he niach meloi machat, even if the father left over what if the father left over only a tiny little bit of land, the size of a needle, which is an exaggerated way of saying that it's a tiny amount. So Rabbi Yonasan says, all the lender would be able to do at this point would be able to collect the amount of a needle. In other words, he wouldn't be able to collect very much of the debt because only the amount that little tiny piece of land is worth. The rest of the loan is going to disappear. But if he left a larger piece of land, the size of an axe, Goyvim Maloy Kaudum, then he would be able to collect the amount, the equivalent of an axe. In other words, the point is, Rabbi Yonasan is saying it always depends how much karka they inherited. Depending on how much they inherited is how much of the loan he's going to be able to collect. But Rabbi Yochanan says no. Afilu hiniach Maloy Machat, even if the father left over a tiny little needle-sized piece of land, Goyvim Maloy Kaudum, nevertheless, the Malva can collect a larger amount from them, the amount, the equivalent of an axe, in other words, the entire debt, because what would happen is that he could be collecting this property again and again, or k'maisa d'ktina d'abaya, as like a case in Ksuvus involving a small plot of land that was brought in front of Abaya. So you have a case that Rashi describes in the Septic Service. We had a case where a person owed 100 zuz to somebody else. When he died, he left over only a plot of land that was worth 50 zuz. So what happens? So a Baal Chayv came and took that land away from them to satisfy 50 zuz of the loan. Eventually, the Yisoimim went and paid him off the 50, and then they got back their land, and then he took it from them again in order to satisfy the other 50, and the case came to Abaya, and Abaya said he's right in doing so because you can do that. The land is still meshuvad to the entire debt, not like Rabbi Yonasan is saying that it's only, you have to go only up to the value of the land and that's it. You can't go beyond that. Beyond that, the debt is forfeited. Rabbi Yochanan and Abaya are saying that it's not. The whole rest of the debt still exists, and therefore you can be told of this land again and again if necessary. So by the same token over here, even if the father left over only a small piece of land, he's able to continue collecting the debt from the miser and continue collecting until the entire debt is paid off. And we don't say that any of the debt is forfeited just because the guy died. Okay. The Gemara says, Tananabanan. We learn in a Braisa more about these dinim of Maisers. Yisrael sh'omel a Levi Maiser yesh l'cha b'yadi. If a Yisrael says to a Levi, there is Maiser Rishon of yours in my possession. So in other words, I separated out Maiser Rishon and I have it available to give to you. We don't have to be concerned about the trumas maisu in it. On the face of it, it means that the Levi, we don't have to be worried. Now, remember, the Levi has to take one tenth of what he received and designate it as trumas maisu that's given to the Kohen, where the Yisrael is not going to be allowed to eat that, unlike he's allowed to eat the rest of the maisu rishon. So in this case, the Yisrael does not have to be concerned, because he only said to the Levi, there's miser in my possession that's going to be given to you. He doesn't have to be concerned that sight unseen, the Levi has now gone and designated that as trumas miser on behalf of other produce of his, because he doesn't know how much there is to be able to do that. On the other hand, kur miser yesh l'cha b'yadi. On the other hand, if the Yisrael says to the Levi, I have a kur of miser in my possession, which I'm going to give to you, then then question the trumas meiser shaboy. Then we have to be concerned about the trumas meiser that's in it. What if the Levi made that meiser rishon trumas meiser on behalf of some other produce of his, and therefore the Yisrael wouldn't be able to eat it? So the Gemara asks, my farmer, what exactly is the case that the Braisa is talking about? You can't just say it means that he's saying to the Levi, I took off my solution, but tough luck, I'm keeping it for myself. What do you mean? It's true, it's chulin, and he's allowed to eat it. But he's allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, he's still not allowed to steal it from the Shevet Levi. So what exactly does the Braisa mean? So Amar Abaya Hochikama. Abaya says this is what the Braisa means. Yisrael sh'om l'levi ma'iser yesh l'cha b'yadi. The Yisrael says to the Levi, I have ma'iser that I separated from my produce that's in my possession, and you should be getting it. The heilach damav, but I would like to buy it from you. Here's money that I'd like to buy that ma'iser rishon off you. So now if the Levi is willing to accept the money, then the Yisroel can eat the Maisu Rishon. Ein choshen shema asoy trumas Maisu amokam achem. We don't have to be concerned that what if maybe after he sold it, the Levi, what if after the Levi sold it, maybe the Levi took this Maisu Rishon and made it trumas Maisu on behalf of some other Maisu that he had at home. The reason is, Rashi says, because he doesn't know how much we're talking about. When he says, kur Maisu yeshul chaviyadi, then what happens if afterwards the Levi might have figured to himself, well, you know what? Now there's a kur of Meiser that I have in this guy's barn. Now let me go and then designate it as Trumas Meiser on behalf of 10 kurim that I have of produce that I have somewhere else. Now it's true, the Levi has accepted money from the Yisrael. The Kinyan has not actually taken place yet. So therefore, on the face of it, the Levi could be separating it, could be designated as Trumas Meiser. So in the first case, the Braiser is saying, you don't have to worry about it, because you didn't tell the Levi the actual amount, such that the Levi should know, now I can take this and give it as Trumas Meiser on something else. But if he tells him, Kur Meiser, Yeshul Chaviyadi, Behelach Damav, but if he tells him there's a Kur of Meiser in my possession, and here is the money for it, And the Levi took the money. We have to be concerned now that he knows how much Meiser there is. Then maybe after selling it, he after taking the money, he still decided that the Kinyan hasn't taken place yet, and therefore I have the right to designate it as Trumas Meiser on something else. Now Rashi learns that we're talking about after the money was transferred. Tosfos said that, and he says, even though it's in the Yisrael's Rishus, we still wouldn't say that as soon as the Yisrael paid the money, he was koneh it, so he hasn't yet been koneh it until he does some kind of kinyan on it. Because Rashi says, the Levi himself has not yet been koneh this Meiser to be able to now be machneh to the Yisrael. So therefore, the Levi would still be able to change his mind and decide that, you know what, it is my Meiser after all, and I want to designate it as Trumas Meiser. Tosfos says that, no, still, what are you talking about? The fact is, in the Yisrael's Rishus, you don't need Meshicha for that. So rather, what it means is, maybe before he ever received the money, before he ever sold it to the Yisrael, he had already decided to make it Trumas Meiser. So in the first case where the Yisrael hadn't mentioned the amount, it wouldn't be a problem. But in the second case where he mentioned that if there's a quart of Meiser, then we have to be concerned about that. The Gemara asks, though, are we talking about, is the Brais that's going to tell us about a case of Rishoyim, the Shakli Domi or Meshavolei? Trumas Meiser, where they're going to take money and then, when it doesn't belong to them anymore, make it Trumas Meiser? No, of course there's no reason we should be worried about such a kind of thing. Or, according to Tosfos, the vote is, should we be concerned that he already designated it Trumas Meiser and now he's going and selling it to the Yisrael, knowing that he's going to be Machshel the Yisrael? So no, we don't have to be so. How could the Braisa be saying that there should be any concern for that at all? So rather, he says, this is what we meant. Yisrael sh'amala ben Levi, maisala avicha b'yadi. It means that if Yisrael says to a lady, your father has maiser that's in my possession. I separated out this maiser, Rishon, while your father was alive. I planned to give it to him. Your father passed away before I had a chance to give it to him. And halach damag, but now I want to offer you. I want to offer you money for it. I want to buy it off you. So in the first case where you didn't mention an amount of money. You didn't mention an amount of money, then therefore, ein choshen shema asoy oviv trumas meiser amokamacha. You don't have to be concerned that the father, while he was alive, had already designated as trumas meiser on other produce, because again, the father didn't know how much there was over here. So therefore, we don't have to be concerned about that. In fact, Tosfos says that in that case, so why do we even need to talk about the case of Halach Dhamma? We could just be saying, the Meiser of your father is in my possession. Why does it even need to mention Halach Dhamma? And Tosfos says, because you could say, Tosfos calls this a Doicha, that the father would have told the son whether in fact he took whether in fact he designated it as Meiser, as Trumas Meiser or not. Bechlal, the Levi himself is not allowed to eat Trumas Meiser until he separates out Trumas Meiser from it. So therefore, until then, it's considered Tevel for him. So if the father had done that or had not done that, we would assume he would have told, he would have told the son. So if he didn't tell him, then we can assume that already Trumas Meiser was taken from it. But when he's selling it off, then Tosfos says he may not remember that particular point. Anyway, so now Yisrael is offering him money for that, says Rav Mesharish here. So when there's no amount mentioned, then we don't have to be concerned that he already designated as Trumas Meiser. So now the Yisrael, and we can assume again that he did already in fact separate Trumas Meiser out from it and give it to the Kohen. So therefore, now the Yisrael would be allowed to buy and eat it. But if he says Kur Meiser La Avicha B'Yadi, but if he says your father has a Kur, which is a specific amount of Meiser in my possession, the Hevach Damav, and I want to buy it from you, here's the money, then you have the concern, Choshen Shemasoi Oviv Trumas Meiser Amokamacha. What if the father had already designated as Trumas Meiser on behalf of other produce that he has elsewhere, and therefore the Yisrael is not going to be able to eat? But the Gemara still doesn't like that answer as well. Meaning people who are careful with Truma and Meiser, are they suspected of taking Truma and Meiser from something that's not adjacent? The halacha is when you're taking Truma and when you're taking Meiser, it's supposed to be that the whole pile of produce or the whole whatever it is that you're taking from should all be together. It should all be contiguous. And here it's not. Here you're saying that conceivably you could have this Meiser that was in the Yisrael's barn that the lady's father might have designated it as Trumas Meiser on behalf of produce, which is someplace else. Chavedim, don't do that. So why should there even be a concern that maybe the father had designated as Trumas Meiser on behalf of something else? In fact, Tosfos refers to a different place where it says that Trumas Meiser does not need to be taken min amukaf. But Tosfos says that's Midera Naisa, Midera Bonan does have to be taken min amukaf as well. So the point is. And Tosfos also points out, by the way, that the fact is that to begin with, you give Truma and Meiser only to Chaverim. So you don't give them to a Kohen Amaretz. Therefore, you have, the Mishnah is saying, therefore, the Braisa is saying over here, and the Gemara is saying over here, that we have every, why should we assume, the Gemara says that he being a Chaver was over on this point. At least Rabbanon is supposed to be separating it from Minam Mukav, and here he wouldn't have been doing that. So Rashi goes on to mention what's the problem of not taking Minam Mukaf is the problem is what if it's the point is that it's supposed to be Mukaf. Tosfos points out that it's not even the truma, regular truma gdola, midaraisa, requires Mukaf. So even if everything is in front of you, it's not just a concern. Like Rashi says, what if the other produce is actually no longer in existence? Even if both of them are in front of you, you still have a mitzvah to do minam mukaf in the case of Turma Gdola, and therefore in the case of Turmas Meiser, Tosfos learns, yeah, did Abban, and you're also supposed to do that. Anyway, so that explanation of the Braisa doesn't work either, because there's no reason we should assume that the father would have done such a thing and separate out the Meiser. A separate and then designated as Trumas Meiser on behalf of produce that he has someplace else where a chover is not supposed to do that. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and we'll continue with analyzing this Braisa and finding exactly what the scenario was, and then we're going to continue with other dinim related to Trumas and Meisers.